evening, ladies and gentlemen. We're here again today. You're here with Pete Tate and, of course, J. Everett Pearsall. Now, you know, today is March 5th. 15th of March is, you know, that Monday. This is, you know, our seventh episode now. Pearsall, is this seven or eight?
I think it's seven. I think we're at seven. At seven.
Seven? Okay. Man, you keep it up, and you know, and many more to come, as I always say. Now, you know, this is something. I got to start the day off. Look at this background of Mr. Pearsall. He's just doesn't make any sense, ladies and gentlemen. If you, I don't know where you may be. You might be in northern Michigan. You may be in Wisconsin. You know, somewhere, you know, in the mountains where it's snowing, somewhere. And look at his backdrop. I mean, the man, the main office is in Baltimore. What in, I mean, is that, that got to be a screen back there behind you, Mr. Pearsall?
Oh, no, that's the beach, South Beach, Florida, right here in Miami, and live and direct. Wouldn't miss the show in person. I thought that this would be better than my picture. And so I am here live on South Beach. And you may hear a little bit of a breeze every now and then, but it's a lovely 84-degree breeze, and I'll take it.
You know, we say that this show is live and it's hot. I guess you took it literally that it's live and it's supposed to be hot.
I mean, absolutely.
Man, you know, we as you know, we both agree, it's full of good news, and we, you know, this is a great day. I mean, no doubt a great day. We got another special guest. Justin Blaylock is the special guest today. And man, our audience is in for a treat. I mean, they're in for a treat. But nonetheless, I just can't help to keep, you know, my eyes. How am I going to keep my eyes on the prize, which is the Watkins Award, and you sitting there with South Beach, with a picture of South Beach in the background? I mean, Mr. Pearsall, I'm not even going to ask the question. You know, football season is over with. I mean, you down there running? Is that what's going on? You exercising?
Working out on the beach. You know, doing my best to make sure that I stay in the top physical condition just for you, Mr. Tate.
Well, I appreciate that. I mean, because you got to move around, because I always say that my sidekick is going from city to city, stadium to stadium. You know, you got to go up. Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize. I was about to say go up those stadium stairs, but Mr. Pearsall is always treated to, you know, those good seats down by the field. I mean, he's either at the 50-yard line or absolutely, you know, unequivocally, he sends an Instagram. So you got to follow Mr. Pearsall on Instagram. You got to follow him on Twitter and go to the Watkins Award website. And you got to see Mr. Pearsall in these spaces, because he gets, you know, those ground level pictures from time to time. But Mr. Pearsall, like I say, I'm gonna get off that South Beach kick, man, because my eyes are consumed with that look right there. It's so peaceful. I mean, can you actually hear the ocean water moving back and forth as well?
I can, and I can feel the ocean breeze. If I go downstairs, my feet will be in the sand. I am as close as you can get to the beach at South Beach.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, this is something, just something. Well, you know, as I mentioned, ladies and gentlemen, we're here, you know, the Watkins Award again on another great, great Monday. And as always, I have to do, you know, that disclaimer, which I need to always do, because the views and opinions of the host and the co-host are not the views and opinion, you know, of the BBSradio.com. Or anyone or any company affiliated with BBSradio.com or our sponsors and advertisers. So we just want to do that disclaimer. I mean, Mr. Pearson, I may say things from time to time that may put someone through brain shock. I mean, kids accomplishing what they accomplish. So today we're going to really indulge in some things because I'm a little teed off. I'm teed off today, Mr. Pearson, and I'm letting you know. I'm teed off. And I'm teed off because I'm the one that keeps taking the heat for you. I take the heat from you. I mean, I get these nasty emails, and if I wanted to be mean, I'd share the email. I'll post the email up. And what I'm going to start doing, I'm going to erase where it's coming from, but you know how people are good. They can create an email, and they can be from whomever, so it doesn't necessarily have to be from that person. But, you know, all fair is the game of war. And I understand sometimes our language could cause people to want to go to war with us because, you know, what got me peed off, and this has happened before. I'm not going to call no one out. I'm not going to rat you out. I mean, I'm just going to rat out what you said to me. That's all I'm going to do. So here we go, Mr. Pearson. Here's what happened. I get this email. And the email essentially is talking about the Watkins Award. And it says that these young men who you all are honoring, and I'm paraphrasing, so this isn't exact language, but these young men that you all are honoring are not your typical athletes, student athletes. And I get that. That's fair. They say, but you know, you need to come off of that horse. You need to come off of that horse and bring those grades down to allow other people to be eligible. And why do you have to only select 4- and 5-star athletes? Why can't it be just a kid that's a 2-star athlete? So I'm going to let you take a little of this heat, Mr. Pearson, because you and I have gone through this before. So, you know, before you give me, you know, the explanation, let's sit back because I know a couple of new listeners that have come on. I'm always all over the place. I'm doing different talk shows and I'm appearing as a guest and I'm talking about the Watkins Award. I'm out in the street. I'm at the airport. You know, I'm in a lot of places. So I do want to say, you know, there are some new people. So they need to know first and foremost that Mr. Franklin D. Watkins was just a community man. I always like to say that. He was just a community man. He was a coach. And as a community man, he just wanted to inspire these great athletes that he was coaching to be just as good in the classroom as they are on the football field or were on the football field at that time. So he, you know, of course, started a little organization, and the organization got to the point that it was named the Alliance of African American Athletes. You get in there and you create the National Alliance of African American Athletes because there was no other award like this. So let me indulge people's minds. Let me get something clear here. I don't mind giving a little free publicity, you know, every once in a while. So everybody has heard of the Heisman Trophy. It honors the top athlete in college football. It honors the top athlete. I mean, you got to be something special. There's only been one person, and whatever amount of years the Heisman Trophy has been awarded, there's only been one person who was able to win this trophy twice. One person, and that was Archie Griffin. That's just how hard it is to be honored with this trophy. You got everybody, every athlete on the field. You could be a special team, although there has been individuals who have won the Heisman Trophy who also played special teams. But their primary position was either defense or offense, and they just happened to play special teams as well. But this trophy is reserved just for those high-end athletes. Now, through the National Alliance of African American Athletes, and sadly, Mr. Watkins has passed now, but the trophy that honors those top scholar athletes is named after him. So now this trophy we have, we go around the country. Now, people want to know, how do you find these athletes? The same way coaches on a football team find these athletes. We look at the same scouting reports. You got various scouting reports, top scouting reports, that they rely on in order to find the best athlete that play football, baseball, or basketball. I want to make sure that people know that as well. It's for those three sports. However, you and I have discussed in previous shows, go back to the other shows, check them out, that if there's someone who possibly is extremely athletic in a sport, we would consider him, because it's for a male athlete, we would consider him for this award. But he has to be at the top of his sport, no matter what it is. He has to be at the top of his sport. And we got to know this soon enough. So we also rely on coaches. There's some coaches. I mean, I wouldn't have never known about Chris Burnett. I just happened to run into a former NFL guy who just happened to be a former University of Georgia All-American, who just happened to tell me about this kid who's a five-star named Chris Burnett, who had a 5.1. And just like most people who listen to this show, they listen and they say, wait a minute, 5.1. Don't nobody. You can get a 5.1 GPA. So essentially, I'm just leading up to that point to let you know what the National Alliance of African American Athletes is. It's an organization. The Watkins Award is the award from the organization that actually identifies those young men who are seniors in high school. Those young men. So, Mr. Pearsall, what I want to indulge you with is, okay, we have some parameters. Don't worry about that. That's okay. You're on South Beach, baby. No.
That's real. That is absolutely real.
But we find these athletes, so we have a certain criteria. So, Mr. Pearsall, what is your response to someone that says, okay, you need to lower that GPA of yours. You need to lower that 4- and 5-star status. You need to lower that. What's your response, Mr. Pearsall?
I find it quite ridiculous. And if I could be just direct and to the point with my feelings in terms of someone who would say something like that and direct it toward my organization and my award that, again, is out there to reward excellence. Why on earth, number one, would we lower our standards? We have more than the individuals that we honor, being those five guys that we decide that we want to show the world as the best scholar athletes in the country. There are others out there that can compete for the award as well, but we just picked five. But why on earth would we lower our standards as Black people when there are people all over the country that are just like these guys and inspired by the work that they do? The second thing that I would say is that it's ridiculous to reward underachievement. Think about that. reward underachievement. You're asking us to acknowledge and award underachievement. Now, there's a place, a time, an effort, an initiative to take someone that needs a little push, needs a little encouragement, needs the uplifting. But it's not the Watkins Award. The Watkins Award is going to show people all over the world that there are people year in and year out that have 4.5 grade point averages, 5.0 grade point averages, that are the best quarterbacks, the best linemen, the best defensive players in the country. And yet, you know, you don't know that until we talk about them. So it is absolutely ludicrous for you to come at my organization and to even in any way, shape or form intimate that we are doing something wrong or we should lower our standards. We will never do that because I think we as people have in large numbers people out there that deserve the Watkins Award. It's unfortunate. Funding allows us to recognize five. But, you know, these guys, although you may look at them as though they're the unicorns, year in and year out, we have a very strong, stiff competition of individuals that could very well be honored for the Watkins Award. And we'll stay real where we are. We want them to get tougher and tougher. We want the GPAs to get higher and higher. We want the athleticism to get better and better. We will never lower our standards. Did I make that clear?
Oh, Mr. Pearsall, well, I mean, I'm clear on it. You may have a few people that might be sweating right now. So let me also point out something else, because a lot of people think that these Watkins kids don't come from challenging backgrounds. They think that these kids come, you know, the daddy is a lawyer, the mama is a doctor, you know, or mama is an engineer. They living in the suburbs in some nice houses, you know, that you all this TV stuff that you see. This is unreasonable to believe that a kid come from the inner city. Obviously, they wasn't listening to the last show or a couple of shows back when Lorenzo Alexander was on the show, of course. Of course, they wasn't listening to the show a couple of shows back when Wayne Lyons was on the show. I mean, and we can go on and on. And if they continue listening to our show, they will get an opportunity to hear how no parent homes, you know, people who are working 9 to 5 or just barely making it, who are making the sacrifices for their kids, because this is a team effort. When we get the kids in, you know, a room together, we get the parents, we talk to the parents, you know, we're so thankful that the parents have gotten them to this point. And one of the most, how can I put this? One of the most satisfying events that I see that we do every year is to gather those parents around and begin to tell them the 30 years, 31 years, whatever year that they came through, it gets the years get more and more. But all of the time that you have spent, you get a chance to meet and talk with some of the leading so-called experts in the business, the leading experts, whether they financial experts, legal experts, medical experts, academic experts, all these experts, some got good intentions, some got bad intentions, but clearly we've been able to kind of massage the information that we've gotten over the years and be able to transfer that information over to those parents. And without a doubt to those kids, because you got to be careful what you ask for. I tell parents this all the time. You want your kid to be this high-end athlete. He goes to this Power 5 school. He just left a school that they only, you know, to get in is only $5 to get a ticket into the stadium. You and I know that there are some people that would be willing for certain games. For certain games, they easily would pay $3,000 for a scalp ticket. No problems whatsoever to get into that stadium. We also know that when you walk up to the stadium, we teach our kids these things. There's some things that just a normal person would not know. They wouldn't know that the closer you get to that stadium, those individuals didn't get there early in the morning, like 4 and 5 o'clock in the morning, and wait till a space open up and drive that car up there that's right there at the stadium where they only have to walk 50 feet into the stadium. Those are your big corporate donors. Those individuals identified by the university to have the privilege to talk close to the state. You and I that had to walk miles from back in the back in order to get to the stadium. I mean, clearly, these stadiums are just as big as NFL stadiums. I mean, they just happen to be collegiate stadiums. But indulge me, Mr. Pearsall, when you get into the stadium, I mean, there's no doubt you and I have been in these states, but when you get into the stadium, talk about what you see a freshman who just left high school where, you know, now don't get me wrong. I know when I go down to Texas, I get into Texas and I see things down there in Texas you just don't see everywhere. I mean, the stadiums are phenomenal in Texas. As a matter of fact, I think 9 out of the top 10 largest high school stadiums come out of Texas. And I think right now, is one of the stadiums that it's already built. But one of those stadiums, I think it cost them $50 million to build a high school stadium. I mean, man, you go in that stadium and you see that crowd, what do you think this freshman is thinking about? Because a lot of our kids are so talented. They play their freshman year, let alone a few of them do get a chance to start. But what do you think about that pressure going into that stadium?
Well, the first I'll do is I'll piggyback on what you talked about in terms of our Watkins kids coming from different socioeconomic backgrounds. We've seen it all. And really, whatever it is that individual has gone through, you know, God's had a path and a hand on their lives, and they've built who they are through the experiences that they've had, through the existing situation that they had to come out of, so if you will. But we've seen it all. But to your point, the electric nature of a stadium that you go into, and out because our guest today went to University of Texas, you go in there and the electricity, the energy, the size and amount of people that are in there. As a businessman, the first thing I think of is how much money they made off tickets. And then I think about all of the people that just kind of are there to root on their team and to make sure that they transfer that energy down on the field. Some of the things that we do as an organization at the very beginning from the Watkins Award is to try to get through the process of interviewing these young men on the red carpet and kind of trying to coach them up so that they're already ready for the big stage and there's nothing that they're going to be asked to do that they haven't done before. And as you mentioned, a lot of them are playing as freshmen and definitely as sophomore. I mean, the goal of a kid that goes to college today, believe it or not, is to get out in 3 years. And, you know, usually and before, you know, someone with red shirt and, you know, then they figure out if they want to exercise the end of that red shirt. But it's almost as though a kid is considered to be a failure if they're not getting out in 3 years these days. And recruiters are already looking for the next player to be there in that fourth year, if you will. But being in some of the big college football stadiums, you recognize the big business that it is. And all the Watkins guys are ready to step up to that once they get there and to be able to perform given the opportunity. And some obviously have had situations where they've been able to step in and do things right away, and some have worked toward it, but everyone's had their own journey. But it's exciting, very exciting.
You know, and I'm glad you mentioned, you know, that. I'm glad you mentioned the fact that what we do as the Alliance, you know, the things that are so overlooked. And, you know, sadly, a lot of people just think that a lot of these kids just fall and hit their head and all of a sudden they got it. Oh, yeah, this is nothing. I mean, there's a lot of 4 and 5 stars that crash and burn. I mean, it's no doubt it happens. But, you know, one of the things I also, and I'm going to, you know, work this out, you know, in my questions with our guest. You know, one of the things that people fail to understand is that you can't wait until the last minute to stop pushing this kid to be a 4 or 5 star. I mean, because you're talking about the best. You're talking about the very best in the United States at, you know, at this game. You got some kids, man, that, you know, do this like a job every day. They studying real hard. They very self-focused. I mean, so in the 4 top states, you got Florida that produces the most college football players. You got Georgia, where I am, is second. You have Texas, that's third, and California, that's fourth. But I go back to the challenges. You got a lot of young men that come through those Texas schools. And, man, just to see the stadiums in those places, man, it just takes you to a whole nother world. But, you know, I'm going to introduce, I guess, I want to go into a commercial, but I guess I'm not going to be able to do that today. I don't even want to do it today. I'm going to just keep on going because I don't want to miss anything of Justin Blaylock. And I'm, you know, he's from Plano, Texas, went to Plano East High School. And, you know, the fact of how his journey, we know that, you know, Justin was a very durable athlete. He played not only on the football team, but he was on the track team as well when he was in high school. And, you know, in football, people got this word that they call pancakes. And I guess Justin became a specialist at pancaking guys, man. I mean, he wasn't getting no penalties. I mean, he was just going out there. Guys had to keep their heads up. But truly, after he leaves Plano East, he goes to the University of Texas, which, you know, you talk about the economics. Man, there is no place like going to the University of Texas and seeing economics. I mean, you talk about the business of football. Oh, my goodness. That's a whole other world. Oh, that money coming in.
Unchanged, unfazed, and unwilling. It's a new day, new world. We all winning. I'm up late, up early. I gotta get it. Keep working. Now we gotta make it. Go get it. You got it. I see you. Go get it. You got it. I see you. Go get it. You got it. I see you. Go get it. You got it. I see you. Go get it. You got it. I see you. Go get it. You got it. I see you. I know you can do it. All you gotta do is put your mind to it.
Oh, that was a quick one. Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to this one. So let me get back to Justin. Now, Justin, he, you know, was pancaking these guys, very durable, not missing no games. Also, you know, as I mentioned, was on track team, was outstanding on track. He was academic, All-American. He played in all the major football games that he could play in legally, of course. He played in them. I mean, and then Justin goes through Texas, wins a national championship. So, yeah, we got a couple of guys, Watkins honorees, that have won national championships. He was also the captain of the football team. You know, it takes a lot to be captain of a football team, especially when you're talking Power Five and you're talking about the University of Texas. Now, he was unanimous All-American. He was Big 12 Offensive Lineman of the Year. He was a four-time first-team All-Big 12. This dude was a beast in high school. And without further ado, Justin Blaylock, how you doing, sir?
Doing well, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, Justin.
What's going on here?
You know, Justin, you got this smile, man. I got you up on the board that I do this little advertising, you know, before the show. And I got you up on the board. And that's all I know you as, a person who loves to smile. You love to smile. But I don't want the coaches or the players. Now, your opposition, they gone now, so you don't have to they don't have to deal with you any longer. When you get on that football field, when you was drafted in the second round by the Falcons, you were drafted in the second round, it was as if you, not even there in Plano, Texas, at, you know, the University of Texas, and even with the Falcons, you have a whole new personality when you put that uniform on and you get on that football field. I mean, you transform in from Dr. Jekyll to Mr. Hyde on the football field. So tell me, how was it growing up in Plano, Texas? Now, you were born in Dallas, but obviously you got to Plano. So how was it playing football in the state of Texas?
I think it's well documented, and I heard a little bit of what you guys were talking about earlier, how important football is in Texas. You know, we're famous for the Friday night lights, you know, towns shutting down to watch the local high school team play every weekend. So having that environment be around, you know, from the time you're back in elementary school, you're probably going to these games, you know, going, tossing the ball around with your friends, you know, under the bleachers at halftime. It really is a lifestyle down there. And I think I heard you guys talking about how many, you know, players end up playing beyond high school. That's, you know, the goal of most of the kids there. And so in order to make that happen, you know, you're doing all the studies, you're doing those workouts. I think we started in seventh grade for the school, but you could play, you know, Pop Warner, YMCA ball, bowling as early as maybe second grade. So it's in the blood down there.
So, you know, you say something very important about starting in the seventh grade, but also starting in Pop Warner. So if you start that early, you was raised by your moms. Mm-hmm. Now, your moms, man, I mean, who you talk about? I know some football mamas. Your mama is a football mama. So when did you finally realize that, you know, hey, I'm using this to get me a free education. I'm going to play, you know, college football, as you mentioned, the mentality of these kids down there. But I'm involved because one of the things about the Watkins Award is we try to educate. We want these other mamas and these other athletes and the dads as well. But we want the parents to know exactly what does it take. What was your mama, Miss, you know, Jackie Blaylock Robinson, what was she doing at that time?
Well, first things first, she was a school mom, you know, first. After I finished with that, then I could, you know, do my sports or whatever my extracurricular of the week was. You know, truth be told, you know, my parents were great about being supportive no matter what I did. Like I said, I started playing, I think, in the second or third grade for our YMCA, which is the, you know, outside of school league, you know, at that age. So 7, 8 years old, maybe. They were at every game from then up until Atlanta. I think they went to every game in college. And I played 50 of them jokers. So they were extremely supportive from the time I was, you know, knee high to, you know, grown man. Dad was at practices when he could be. A couple times he was the coach. So parents were definitely very, very involved you know, the whole way through. And, you know, still went to a lot of games when I played in Atlanta even. Obviously, it's a little tougher to make those games than, you know, Texas games are all in the Midwest, kind of, mostly in Texas, honestly. But, you know, you travel around the country professionally. So a little tougher there, but they still made all those that they could. So it certainly helps to have, you know, that kind of support system, rides to practice, things of that nature. But just someone that's always going to make sure that you're doing what it takes, you know, first of all, to be eligible, and second of all, to excel once you're actually on the field, whether it be, you know, extra work outside of practice or, you know, training programs in the off season, which from now is probably commonplace. But back then, I think, you know, we were one of the few schools that had such a program, you know, outside the season, outside of school even. So in the summertime, we'd go up, work out with kids, you know, from the local area. Not necessarily, you know, your team, but just, you know, getting your body right. So when you know, fall camp started, well, 2 days back then, I know they're kind of softer now, but when that started, you were ready.
Don't call him soft, man. Don't call him soft. Well,
you, no, okay.
Here's, you know, another thing. You know, it's obvious that, as I mentioned earlier, you were very durable. I mean, it's, when you went to University of Texas, you didn't miss any games. I mean, you every game, you suited up. You come to Atlanta, you're durable. Man, I mean, some people just don't realize the beating you take day in and day out on that line. But I only say that because you spoke of your parents and how they would come to the games. And I saw sometimes the challenge that your mom and pop would be going through to get to the game. I mean, the challenge, I mean, obviously that was like a motivation to you that you had to play football. It was no way you was not going to play on that Sunday in the Falcon Stadium or wherever they went to. But I know when they came here, I would see them, and man, they were coming to your game. It was no doubt rain, snow, sleet, whatever the case may be, they were going to be at your game. So it must have been a heck of a motivator that you just continued to play. But I never seen anyone that had the kind of technique that you use. I mean, your technique was so crisp and clear as a lineman. I mean, how did you pick up on your technique so clean like that?
Well, a lot of it is being coachable. I was durable. As you alluded to, our coaches often, you know, told us the best ability is availability. So, you know, being able to be out the field every week, I was, you know, pretty smart, I thought. Wasn't necessarily the biggest or fastest. So I had to, you know, make use of what I had, which was, you know, a good head on my shoulders. And I was pretty strong all the time. So I tried to tailor my game to my strengths as best I could, and, you know, be very coachable. I was fortunate enough to be around some good ones that taught me a lot. First of all, X's and O's wise, the quickest way to find the bench is not know your plays. So I always made sure I was on top of that. But then just picking up on, what I see a teammate do. If we're watching film and I see another guy from another team somewhere do something interesting, I might try to incorporate that into my game. I can't take all the credit, but I certainly try to put together, a toolbox, if you will, that play to my strengths, so I'd be able to go out there and perform week in, week out, and put a good performance out there.
Okay. Well, I know that Mr. Pearsall getting ready to drag some things out of you, and as I mentioned, this is a family show, so there's some parents out there, some guardians, and some young kids that are out there trying to figure out, how do I make that transition? And you make a great point. One of the things I want to overemphasize, a lot of parents, I've seen them, they blame the coach all the time. But the coach doing this, the coach doing that. And I always say, you got to look in the mirror. Now, that's a kid. That's a child. He's looking for your guidance, and you have to be responsible for. I'm not saying that coaches don't get in the way, but what I am saying is that those parents got to monitor all that kind of stuff and do the things that parents should do to make sure that their kids are moving in the right direction. But Mr. Pearsall, what's going on? Because you and every time I see you and Justin together, like I say, you ain't see nothing, but he was wide-eyed, smiling all the time. But man, when he went on that field, it was it was transformation. I mean, he put on his Superman suit and went to work on Sundays, especially when I would see him in Atlanta. But I know you got something you're going to drag out of him.
Come on now, Justin Blaylock, a.k.a. Mr. Blaylock, a.k.a. JB or JBZ. Welcome to the show, brother. I appreciate you coming on. I just couldn't wait to get you here. Some people are going to be mad at me for saying it, but you're by far the best offensive lineman that we've come through. And again, I'm talking about 30 years. I'm talking about the top athletes in the country that have come through the Watkins Award and applied and nominated, and you are the absolute best. Looking at your career and what was already mentioned by Tyrone, the fact that you've gone through all the way up through college, never missing a game. And then even getting into the league, and it wasn't until your last season that you actually missed a game. Talk about durability and being able to make sure that you did the things that you needed to do to make sure you held up to your end of the bargain and performed in a way that was only acceptable to you and the standard that you set. When you take a look at that national championship, the question I always like to ask, because I know that you could have come out your redshirt junior year and been drafted very high, but you decided to go back and get that degree. And so when you look at the fact that when people look at that film and they see you making the block, right, that scored the winning touchdown for the national championship, and then having to graduate from the University of Texas and knowing that that was a dream of yours, but something that your mom would be proud of as well. Talk about the experience of one compared to the other.
Some people would argue, you got to strike while the iron's hot. I don't think it ever was as hot as that. The following year, we were successful. I think we went 10-3 and played in the Alamo Bowl or something like that. And of course, I know what I know now. Yeah, would I, maybe have done a little bit better draft wise, being on an undefeated national champion team than a 10-3, such and such bowl team? Maybe, but things worked out the way they did. And I'm pretty pleased with the career I was able to have. But like you said, I really was pressed to graduate. I really wanted to make that happen. And I know a lot of guys go back and do it, but I wanted to make sure I did it the first time around. I guess you could say I was a bit of an older rookie. I was 23. Now you see these kids are, 20, 21 sometimes. But maybe that buys them an extra year or, an extra time around the contract table. But, you know, I couldn't be much more pleased than the way it played out for me.
Awesome. Now, since 2002, you've only missed two Watkins Awards, one because you were in a wedding, and the other, obviously, with the pandemic that we had come up. You've been one of our biggest supporters. You've been an inspiration to other Watkins guys and showed them, really, from an example perspective, not telling them what to do, not bashing them verbally, but showing them what Watkins, being a Watkins man, is all about. Tell us, as you had your journey through high school and where we met you at the end, through college, through your, you know, professional career, and even now after, you know, what has the Watkins Award meant to you?
You know, first of all, I should say when we first met, let's say it that way, it was good to see, you know, like-minded young men out there. Even in a place like Plano, which is, you know, suburb of Dallas, pretty, you know, fairly well-to-do folks anyways, there weren't many, you know, kids I could look around and see that, you know, looked like me, were having success in the classroom and on the field as well. You know, of course, we fielded a pretty competitive team, but, you know, most guys weren't. I think my senior year, I was the only guy to go, you know, D1, which is crazy in the biggest high school in Texas at the time. And we were, you know, went to the playoffs every year. So I thought we were going to have, you know, 5, 6, 7 guys end up playing, but it didn't work out like that, you know, for whatever reason. And then once I got into college, it was good to have that foundation or network to be able to lean on. You see the guys, you know, once a year because we have, you know, schedules are tough or whatever, but being able to, you know, hey, I'm going through this. You know, what's it like over there? What do you do when such and such happens? Just having that type of network, people going through a similar situation, with, you know, close to, if not the similar mindset, and professionally, you know, anytime that, you know, you come across a guy on the other side, it's nice to go, you know, rib him a little bit. Maybe, you know, you're running downfield and they don't see you, you get a cheap one in on them.
love it.
it's been great, and I love to see the guys having success, and the guys that I know, we're all, you know, done now, having success, you know, in life after football. And hopefully that can also be just as inspirational to the young guys coming up.
Awesome. One of the things that disappointed me, and there weren't many throughout your entire career, is that when I watched you in your professional career there in Atlanta, you played as what I considered to be the most dominant at your position the whole time you were there. You played, dominated your opposition, and was never able to really get enough fanfare, in my opinion, support from the organization. And I know you didn't play for this, but, you know, you should have been a Pro Bowler on a number of those years. And it really pissed me off because I didn't think that, you know, you were put out there that way. But again, I unabashed say that you are the best lineman to ever come through the Watkins. So now that you've decided to move on to the next step of your life, and I know Watkins guys, as I've always said, you know, I come see you play every year, because football is something that's just a small portion from a time perspective. But when you move on to that next level, that's the part I'm all excited about. You know, you start doing the football camps while you're playing, and the stuff you do off the field, those things excite me. But it's that next chapter. That's when you'll make your biggest impact, and that's where you're going to leave your legacy. Tell me about some of the things that you're doing now, life after football.
Sure, be happy to. So I guess the pandemic's kind of put a wrench in everybody's plans. But the biggest thing I got going on right now is, finishing this house. you came and saw me when I was staying at my cousin's place a couple miles from here. So I moved into a place of my own, doing a lot of renovations. And not me personally doing all of it. I am doing some stuff as much as, you know, I'm able to without killing myself. trying to make this place, you know, in tip-top shape. So that's one thing that takes up most of my day-to-day. Outside of that, you know, I do a little bit of volunteer work. Joined the 100 Black Men of Atlanta. So having a not only a social network, but also something to do a little bit in the community. God knows, I mean, Tyrone, here in Atlanta, lots of folks need, you know, a good, whether the case may be, someone to look up to, someone to talk to, someone, you know, just chew the fat with, whatever the case may be. So do that. Before last week, I had to move all my stuff out of the basement because we're working down there now. So wow. I had a drum kit down there. Now I can't play. In my garage and my neighbors, you know, kind of playing. I've taken up Italian lessons because I always was curious what those great opera singers were saying. And I don't feel like I'm much closer to knowing.
Well, that's awesome. Before turning it back over to Tyrone, that's yet another example of how humble you are. You didn't talk about the fact that you had the Justin Blaylock Foundation where you helped thousands of kids and empowered many throughout Texas and beyond. You didn't talk about the fact that you're a business owner and you have a technology company that is thriving. You didn't talk about the fact that you continue to challenge yourself intellectually, where you've taken classes in different fields, you dabble in the law a little bit, and you're just doing things that continue to enhance who you are as a person and then the impact you can make in others. And so, you know, I know that those things are just kind of, you know, things that you do without thinking about how great they are, but you are great. We are so proud of you, and we just appreciate the opportunity that we had to get you on the phone and chat with you, especially during this pandemic when this is the longest time that I've gone without having seen you in person. And so, Tyrone, I don't know if you have any additional questions to ask.
Well, you know, the only question I have is, what is Superman going to do next? I mean, he got his fingers in his ink pen. Because he's a businessman. Remember, that was a business trip that he took from Plano to the University of Texas, and then from the University of Texas to the Atlanta Falcons. It just doesn't seem, Justin, that you didn't have a plan the whole time that you was moving or transitioning through this football. Now, I just want to make sure I'm clear. Are you still in law school, or you finished now?
No, I decided not to go back.
You decide. Okay, okay.
Well, I guess you could say I was finished.
Okay, you finished. Well, because I hear the language that you used in terms of the younger players compared to your age when you got in and how their cycle of a new contract, they could get another cycle of a contract so they could make more money. You know, coming in earlier, of course, but that means they have to be good enough to be able to stay, you know, the length of time. So it's twofold. But nonetheless, I mean, I know that you are, you know, ideally one of the, as Everett said, you know, you definitely one of the most talented, but to say the least, personable. I mean, just a regular guy. And, you know, this Justin Blaylock Foundation, I want people to know that it provides activities and learning events to underprivileged student athletes. And your goal was to develop students between the ages of 12 and 18 to become productive citizens in society. So that's all a part of the Alliance. And these young men will go back out and do these things. And I know that, you know, your mom's is very, very active in everything that you do outside. And Justin, for people to know, so if somebody needs to, they want to keep in touch and find out what's going on in the Justin Blaylock life, what is your Twitter account?
I don't know.
Don't worry. Don't even worry. I'll get that to them. They can go to Mr. Pearsall's Twitter account always.
Absolutely.
They can come to my Twitter account.
It's not social, like on social media that hard.
Okay, don't worry. I realize I'll get that going. The real T Tape, they can go to my Twitter account. I saw your Twitter account. I just don't remember it off the top of my head. But I saw it, and it wasn't just Justin Blaylock. But
Just Blaze 63.
There you go. There you go. I mean, man, I say, who in the heck is this? I'm always used to Mr. Blaylock, you know. And it's Just Blaze 63.
Now, Justin, normally your jersey would be behind me, but I'm on South Beach. So, different background.
I can hear the music coming in. And I want to thank Justin Blaylock. Certainly, I want to thank our sponsors. I want everybody to support our sponsors, JMASolutions.com, ExoticCarSharing.com, Warlaw Office, Roscoe Jenkins Funeral Home, and J.C. Lofton's Professional Alterations and Custom Tailoring, where every Pearsall go to get his suits altered and sometimes custom made. Justin Blaylock, I want to say thank you so much for your time, giving us this opportunity. Have a beautiful and wonderful time, and we will undoubtedly get you back on another day to talk about some other things. All you gotta
do is put your mind to it. Thanks a lot, Jay Beezy.
This has been the Watkins Award Show. This is Everett Pearsall and I, again, with our special guest, Justin Blaylock. We thank you for stopping by. Have a beautiful and blessed day. We looking for that next one. We know he's out there somewhere.